First,
did you jot down any dates there in the years?
Yes, I do.
Good.
There seems to be a conflict, though. In some places, 1926 is given as the date of the case with, between the black shirts and the Italians, and in other places, it's 1928.
It, 26 is when I graduated law school. In 28, I would. So it could be between 27 and 28 mm-hmm. in that period. That would be best to put the black shirt between 27 and 28.
All right. Well, why don't we start with that one? Because that was one of your earlier ILB cases,
yes.
Wasn't it? Now, I was not able to find any information on it, though, so I have no background at all.
Well, I'll give you what I can remember on that. I think I ought to put it on now,
yes,
already.
We're on now.
Oh, this was, there was a time, I may have told you that before, that I have in a moment of, what shall I say, laziness or other foolish thinking, I decided to dispose of my papers. In fact, I called Ann Ginger, responsible for the Micklejohn Library here, and has been active as long as I've known her, because she's not one of my disciples. One of the other one is. I have another.
Is that Thelma Furry?
Thelma Furry.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, Thelma Furry is my disciple. I asked if she could use my paper. She says, yeah, it would be wonderful for our library, she says, if you could only organize them for me, classify them. So I told her, I do not have an office, I didn't have any help, and I am not much of a producer, so I'll have to forget about it. So that's shortly after that, as I disposed of, I'd say, 90% of my papers. I do have, I don't know how these escaped mm-hmm. that I'm talking to you, so I'll give you what I can remember. Now, going back to what you call the black shirt case, what reference are that you found on those cases?
That was primarily from your own references to it.
Yeah, let's talk about black shirts.
There were five Italian communist workers who got into a scuffle with these black shirts,
and
apparently someone called it a factional dispute.
Well, what happened, a group came to Cleveland, and they soon found out, the ILD, all this information found its way to the ILD, the ILD soon found out that there were a group of young men all wearing black shirts with armbands. Today I cannot tell you what those armbands were, but...
Perhaps the fascis?
Huh?
The fascis?
The swastika? I don't know whether the swastika or not.
Mussolini first used that fascis, he called
them. Yeah, fascists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was, I know they were Mussolini people. And Cleveland was considered a pretty progressive city, as cities go, and they had a progressive mayor there called Tom L. Johnson. And there was the public square, was a large marble bust of Tom L. Johnson, and that held speakers of every conceivable ideology, good, bad, and what have you. And these fascists got together and they made speeches from Tom L. Johnson. And some, I think they were, I forget what the name of the youth group of the progressive people. See, that's the trouble. I forget the name. The name of some
point.
Not the young pioneers. Well, a young something. Anyhow, they were a group, and that they were very close to the ILD because they were up on these things. They knew what was going on. They hung around, a lot of them, in school, out of school, with work, without work, all kinds of... Mainly, there was a lot of unemployment in those days also. So, they listened to them. And in all these public square meetings, the speakers get questions. And I got questions from some of these kids. And they started to put questions that were meaningful as far as coming to the United States and singing the praises of Mussolini. And they'd say, didn't Mussolini do this and the other thing? And there is it wound up into a fist fight. And the people who were arrested, if you please, were not these Italian fascists, the black shirts, but the Communist League. I think that
it was the
young Communist League. That's right, and it was young something. Mm-hmm. The Young Communist League, I think it was, I'm not sure whether any girls or not, but there were a number.
I think there were.
A number of young men and women. And sure enough, they were arrested and charged with assault and battery. That's when the ILD called me. It's one of the early cases. And the judge put a date on for the trial. For the next day or what have you, they were all locked up. I said, Your Honor, I'd like you to put on some bail for them. As far as I'm concerned, you can put them on their own recognizance because I know these girls and boys. I know the only home they have is Cleveland. They wouldn't go anywhere. And I saw the prosecutor jump to his feet. A bunch of commies, a bunch of reds, and I know, Your Honor, they're dangerous. They're very dangerous. I said, how interesting to label them dangerous people and to call the Mussolini representatives to give them a clean bill of health. The judge didn't like the interchange there, and he put some bail. I don't know what kind of bail he put on them. He put on the case for a day or two later. I said, I am sure that I will not be able to prepare myself for that date. First, I want a jury. This is, you want a jury? Don't you know assault and battery is misdemeanor? Well, it depends what the court will find then. I know anything that carries days with it is not a misdemeanor. It's entitled to bail, to a jury. And the judge looked at me and didn't like what I was saying, but he wasn't too sure. He said, well, let's put on, how much time do you want? I said, well, let's say a week for the time being, and then I'd have to hurry because I've got other cases, you know. He says, I know you have. He already knew that I had other cases. At any rate, when I went to the jury commissioner, and I told him to have a jury ready for me on such and such date in a week from now. He said, Mrs. Land, you know what? You should have your head examined. I says, and that is why. And he picked up an inkwell from the desk. He says, you see this? It's dry. The city hasn't got any money for ink, and you're asking me to get you a jury for those so-and-sos. I says, wait a while before you call anybody in the first place. You don't know what they are or they aren't. I can tell you what the state's witnesses are. The state's witnesses are fascists. And they're making no bones about it. They're singing the praises of Mussolini, and maybe they were afraid to do it in Italy, so they had to come here to do it. And for these young men and women, I don't want a record against them. Well, what does a record mean to them? It doesn't make any difference to them. Well, at any rate, I want a jury. Well, it's up to the jury commissioner to grant a jury, you know.
Oh, it's not up to the judge.
If the judge says definitely no, see? And he said, I'll confer with Judge Green about it. We went to trial, and we started picking a jury. And the prosecutor started red-baiting from one end of the jury box to the other. And then it was my turn to examine the jury, and he kept waving the red flag before them all the time, what a danger it is. I asked the juries, I says, maybe we can save time if I merely ask those of you who have already formed an opinion on the ideology of communism and communists, would you please raise your hands? And one raised his hand. He says, well, I didn't exactly form an opinion, but I never hear anything good about them. I says, I see. Then I started asking them how long they've lived in Cleveland. And most of them had long residences. Now, during these years, did you ever hear of a man, woman, young or old, known to be a communist, who has done any damage to anybody's property? A lot of them were homeowners. Didn't get an answer. And then I repeated the same form of question, did you hear of anybody so-and-so and so who has ever killed anyone or injured anyone unless in an accident? The answer all was no. I didn't challenge any of them. Mm-hmm. Now it says this is a very interesting case because it has two ideologies according to the prosecutor and according to me. The prosecutor has communism in here. To my way of thinking, it has no part of the case at all. It is an out and out brawl with a group of Italian fascists. And I'm not labeling them. If they take the witness stand in the same uniforms that they wore when they were defiling Tom L. Johnson's statue, you won't have to ask me. You'll know it yourself. And we have read in our papers quite a bit about what Mussolini says war is beautiful, and whatever at that time I knew more about actually what Mussolini was saying than now, you know. And I don't remember whether we excused any juries or not, but there the jury was. And the prosecution always goes on first. In a civil case, the plaintiff goes on first, the one that claims something or complains about something. And in a criminal case, this is a criminal case, the government goes on first, the state went on. So they called a police officer who was the first very impressive witness. He came and he saw these young men were on the square talking there about something in Italy, and attacked them. Our people attacked them. And that's all. He didn't need much of a, he had a case made up. Mm-hmm. But I went to, I said, were you there from the inception of the meeting? Yes, I was. And what was so important about this meeting that you had, and I asked him whether, and he had a certain beat along the way, that you had to divert your course and be at this meeting. It took him an awful long time to answer. Well, I guess they didn't like what they didn't say. I says, who didn't like what didn't say? And he says, your people, he didn't call them the communists, your people, I says, you mean the defendants? Defendants now, yes, the defendants didn't like what who was saying. These people. Well, who are these people? Are they plaintiffs? Yeah, they're not plaintiffs. They just wouldn't. Well, you call them fascists. I says, you're right. It's exactly not the fascists. And anyhow, we established that they knew. I says, in other words, you had reason to believe, I says, that an experienced officer trying to keep law and order or whatever. So he said, you suspected that there would be trouble there. He says, yes, we did. And can you tell the court and jury, I needed the court like a hole in the head, but out of respect to you, always include the court. Mm-hmm. You tell the court and jury what there was about this meeting that made you feel that an officer or officers would be needed. He says, well, they had these black jackets on and they had these things on their arms and they were talking all the time about lots of nice things that Mussolini was doing. And you felt that the general public wouldn't like that very well, didn't you? He said, well, I didn't know. I says, well, so why? He finally had to say yes. In other words, you were there to protect the public against these fascists, weren't you? Because you knew sooner or later somebody of our citizens of Cleveland, young or old, wouldn't like what they were saying because they didn't think it would be very good for our country. And the prosecutor objected. I says, well, let me put it this way. You heard what they were saying, yes. Did you think what they were saying, would you like to have that in our country? Would you like to have a Mussolini in Cleveland? Of course not. And of course not. At any rate, case went on, and every one of my clients were acquitted by the jury. I don't know how long we battled, but I didn't spare those kids on the witness stand. I did ask him what made them come all the way from Italy to bring this message of hate. I said, and war, and more hate, and more war to the United States. And why did you pick Cleveland? And they just sat there, couldn't answer. By the way, who paid your fare here? You didn't hitch a ride here, did you? Who paid your fare? Well, I don't remember. This is damaging. Whichever way they said, it's damaging answer. And I know the jury wasn't out very long, and they acquitted every one of our people. And if you please, the jury system was inaugurated for good. I never had a case in municipal court without demanding a jury. And so they tried their best to reduce, after that, anything that our people were involved in, that the ILD, that I was the ILD lawyer. I wasn't their individual lawyer, I was the ILD lawyer. The prosecutor tried to reduce it. It shouldn't be any time, and it shouldn't exceed $50 in fines.
Oh, then it would fall under.
Huh?
Then it could not.
That have to be $50 in fine and no time. So they, which was just a fine, and they'd never have any time served. Yeah. I will drop the case at this time. I'll only mention something good because it happens to be an experience with the same judge. It was during the Depression days, I know. It was all into the same period, when I had a lot of welfare clients. And one woman had a difficulty with one of the, they had trouble with the social workers, mm-hmm. because the social workers, unfortunately, didn't understand the score. They used to get
the kids. Is
this
the story about the woman with the tomatoes?
No. From the middle class, that they had high school, some had college, mm-hmm. and they didn't understand what it was all about. So this woman had a run with one of the social workers. Her case was called for trial. That's the first time after she was arrested. It wasn't set down yet. It was set down for that morning. Mm-hmm. And that same morning, I had a trial across the hall, another type of the case. So it was before Judge Green. I said, Your Honor, which kind of hold my case back a little bit because I have a court and judge Westrup's court. There's a woman judge or something else, you know. And he nodded his head, yes, and they called another case. And when I was finished, and I told Judge Westrup that I had a case across the hall, so she called mine soon, and I came back. When I came back, I found my client was not there. A young woman, oh, she must have been in her 30s maybe, or 25. And I think she had children. I looked around, I started asking where my client is. I don't remember her name. When I don't talk to you, I'll think about it. I'll remember it anyhow. So someone, I think the court bailiff, said Judge Green sent her somewhere. I said, well, there, because I finished in there and I'd like my case there. Well, I was forced to wait till it was finished to call. There were cases, there were drunks and this and that, short things, and they made short work, and the clean out. When they were all gone, I said, Judge, where is my client? Well, I sent her over to be examined by Dr., I don't remember, psychiatrist. Well, in those days, psychiatry was not as kosher as it is today. It was a blemish on the person, on his stability, on his everything in life. And I was so outraged, and there were just people sitting in the court who waited for cases that would take longer, but the short cases that were standing up was cleared away. And I don't recall whether they had already returned her after her examination or before. I said, Your Honor, you know what I've got to say about what you did with my client? Before I submit her to trial, if in your mind she needs a psychiatric examination, she's not fit to be considered for trial. But there's one thing I can tell you. If she were a banker's daughter, and she were here under the same circumstances, you would not take it upon yourself. I wanted to say dare, but I was careful. You would not take it upon yourself to submit her to such an outrage as you did, this mother of young children. And I forget, Roger. Would you repeat what you said, Mrs. Lamb? I said, I'll make it short. If she were a banker's daughter, you wouldn't do what you did to Mrs. So-and-so. Mrs. Lyon, I find you in contempt of court. Take her away, bailiff. And we both went. He took me and she, she was not on bail or anything. She just was brought up from her cell. That is, before she was taken to this doctor for examination. And we occupy the same, before they found the cell, we were in some kind of a little admittance room or something. We both sat there together. So I had a chance to see the inside of it. Heretofore, I used to see him in the visiting room where you visit your clients, but anyhow, I was with her. Before I could get used to the idea of trying to get something out of this experience, to see actually how prisoners are treated inside when you're not in the visiting room. Somebody came up. Ah, there's a petition here, this and that and that. Come on, Mrs. Lang, you're out. I didn't have a chance to get what I wanted.
Was that the first time you'd been cited for contempt?
That is the first time that I was cited for contempt. While the case was pending, now I'm not saying this with any glee because I don't gloat over any death. While this case was pending, Judge Green died. And the case was taken over to Judge Grossman.
Oh, that woman?
That woman, mm-hmm. Judge Grossman, she handled the... She says, well, Mrs. Lamb, this is a Green case, and of course there's a petition. I forget what petition was that got me out, you know, that to reverse the order, you know. And that was prepared by my office and the ILD 123 because they got word right away from some of our people must have been in the court. Know about it. She says, Miss Land, what do you think about this Green case? Well, I said, I'll tell you what I think. I still think that if she were a banker's daughter, the judge would not take it upon himself. He would not dare to meddle with the life of a young woman to put a blemish on her life and her family, as the judge did. And I think if the judge were honest with himself, he would know that he'd made a mistake, and he... Well, she said, I want to know, did you really have contempt for him? I says, I don't understand what you mean by contempt. I am afraid that there are other judges who would probably do the same thing, but I don't have contempt for them. They just think different than I do. I had no contempt for Judge Green, and I didn't, because he was one of the judges, that's all, see. So that was my experience with Judge Green, first with the black shirts in getting a jury out of him, and secondly, in this case, I don't think the death had anything to do. He was a red-faced person. He may have had a bad heart or something. I don't know, because it wasn't too long. It could have dragged out for a year or so.
Yeah, let me ask. Something came to my mind when you were talking about the black shirt case, and it's obvious throughout your career, you seem to have had incredible faith in the jury always.
I did, because I felt that while there are very many narrow-minded people in the run-of-the-mill, the average man and woman, whether it's a worker or a business person or a farmer or what have you, but these very same people who do not give much time to how to improve things or how it can be better for everybody are very often impressed by others who know more than they do. And if on the jury I would find one or two persons who knew how to put the case to them from the better side of life, you know, not to label all these things criminal, there would be a chance of getting a majority. I'm trying to recall in these municipal cases, in the small cases, a majority was enough.
Oh, I see. See?
But in the criminal cases, you need 100% agreement.
So it was more from the standpoint of that you felt certain people could influence the other rather than that you believed in the goodness.
That's right. I did not believe in the goodness of all of the people, because I've met with too many in the union who are in the union simply because they got something out of it, see. And as a matter of fact, during the war, it must have been during the war, my older son went to work in the union, in a union, and I don't know what connection that was with at all, but there came a time when he had to take up a collection on behalf of strikers. And those who balked, those who refused to put anything in the kitty for the strikers, were the ultra-reactionaries who were union men, but just to... Oh, yes, I remember now. He said, and look, he says, I'm giving my time for nothing. I'm not getting paid for this. Because I'm giving my time here for nothing. Well, you can do it if you want to, but that's not the way I see it. So I wasn't that foolish. I was foolish in a lot of things. I was foolish in thinking that a man like Debs couldn't be wrong. He had to be right the way he, the sacrifices he made, the things he did. I was foolish when after the Russian Revolution, 1917, was it? I think it was 1917. And could have been the same year. There's a May Day riot in Cleveland, and that May Day riot is a long, long story. It is a long, long story of the 1918 May Day riot. And that I'll want to take time sometime.
Well, maybe next time.
To give you that. Mm-hmm. I would think so, because that would take too long now, so you can hold the May Day riot on that. Put down 1918.
The other thing that comes up is in that black shirt case is your use of the courtroom as a political forum.
Well, it as a matter of fact, it's hard for me to say when it wasn't, because when I followed the Debs case, as I told you the last time, and when I felt that he was not getting proper representation, I already felt that a lawyer who had the courage of his conviction that people have a right to speak out against war, that people have a right to say you didn't raise your son to be cannon fodder and stuff like that. I think I had already gone into it like that. And when I went to the Western Reserve to talk with the supervisor, the woman supervisor, and asked her what I should go into, whether it should be just public speaking or, well, she says, depends if you've got a message for the people, you think you have a message. I says, well, I think I have. I'd like to take up the practice of law. She says, God bless you. Go ahead and do what you can. She thought I was a little, you know, because I had two children already. Had a husband and a family. At any rate, so I can think of a time when I went in the courtroom without finding a political end to it. Because I started out with these little cases that became involved that ILD would take up. They were after foreigners that time, the foreign-born, and if a policeman, or those who were on the side of the police, bumped into a foreign-born, and one who was somehow connected with the ILD, because ILD was for the foreign-born, the internationals, the International Labor Defense. So they were taking care of most of the foreigners. Well, that was a double strike against them, and their chance in court was, as the proverbial saying is, like a snowball in hell. You had to come in there and show that it is not a criminal case. It is not an assault and battery. It is none of the things to say. It is pure and simple political. Therefore, if you didn't manage to bring in the politics, many times I didn't have to. The prosecution did it. They labeled it red, and then they opened the door.
I see.
And they opened the door for me. Still, they tried to stop me when I shot it, and I'd always remind them who opened the door in the case, see?
But your tactic was never, your tactic seemed to have always been an offensive one, bringing up the political rather than a defensive one.
Correct.
Which is what made you really a political lawyer.
Yeah, I would say it was offensive. When I was flabbergasted when Judge Green sent that young woman to have her head examined, I knew that I was stepping out of my role as an officer of the court to tell him that he wouldn't do it. In other words, he's not meeting out justice. That's what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I put it that way. If she were a banker's daughter, I linked him up right square with the group that he was really looking out for. At least that was my feeling at the time. I think they did. To hold on to judgeships and stuff like that and bailiffs and all that, they had to be with the powerful class.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there was a witch hunt on, and anybody who in any way aligned themselves with the communists or with the International Labor Defense would say, that's not international, but that's a commie organization. Mm-hmm. Well, it was not. See, the International Labor Defense is not a commie organization, but they hopped so much on it that they got to be getting more and more communist leaders working in the International Labor Defense, but they didn't start out that way. See?
Were you the only ILD lawyer in Cleveland, or were there others?
There was a man by the name of N.D. Davis, who was He was a lawyer. He had no ideology of any kind, the right, left, and he was a lawyer. And he got wind from other lawyers that that liberal lawyer there has got a good thing. Well, it's not true, because most of my ILD cases, I either worked for nothing or for something that wouldn't even cover my office expense. So that's not true. I didn't make my, what I got was private cases. At any rate, he started to come up and say, well, Mrs. Land, I understand you can use help from a good lawyer. I says, a good lawyer, there's a lot of room for good lawyers. I emphasized the thing. To make a long story short, he said he wanted to work in the ILD. I says, why don't you talk with Mr. Schiffer? See, that name came to me. In fact, his first name, his last name was Schiffer. He was the director of the ILD work. So he talked to him, and to my regret, to my sorrow, he said, I'm sorry, but we're getting very good service in Mrs. Land. If you want to talk to Mrs. Land, if you're willing to work in court like she does, then that's that. So I had no choice. I said, why don't you take a stab at it and see how you like it? And unfortunately, he didn't, he wasn't there. I was in his office one time, and I saw he was standing, back of the chair of a stenographer. I don't know whether I told you that or not. Mm-mm. And we were talking about the case that I thought he ought to take, because I was pretty well loaded, and I had private work to do. He was talking, he was smoking a cigar. And he took a cigar and flecked it, you know how they fleck, on the top of the stenographer's head, on her hair. And to me, that showed such contempt for people who are not, quote, professionals. She was only a steno. And it seems to me that opened a dislike in me for him. But later, that's just the it's annoying my neck. Later, when I saw him in action in court, he couldn't get away from his buddying with the bailiff and with the prosecutor and buzz in corners, and I really never knew whether he was with us or against us. I never felt very comfortable. And then we had a lot of disagreements. He didn't like the idea of making a fuss over an A and B case. What's the salt and batter? So he wouldn't want to spend money for jury, so the ILD will pay $50 for him. I says, what about a record of conviction? Isn't that anything? What about letting the jury know what's going on, and if put it on any kind of offense that they wanted that's under a jury, there are always people in the courtroom who know what to do and get ideas. Well, he says, you're carrying your philosophy on your court robe.
Mm.
Yeah. Of course, lawyers don't wear court robes, but that's the way you put it, on your court. At any rate, he was there for a while, and I didn't mention his name, did I?
No.
Well, I won't, because he did not have a good standing with the people that knew. Except one came to me, was very much amazed. She says, Mrs. Land, you know what I heard? I don't know. Mr. So-and-so told me that you work for him. I says, oh? You sure he didn't tell you that maybe that I work with him? We did work together in some cases. No. He says, you know, Mrs. Land, she works for me. So I thought, and that showed that he was very petty, you know.
Yeah.
See? At any rate, when I left Cleveland, when I retired, I think he was still practicing, but he was pretty much out of ILD cases.
But he did continue for quite a long time then.
Off and on, off and on, not very much. But I didn't follow him too much. I know we went into a very important case one time. And I forget what it is. And I said, look, you're still handling IOD cases, aren't you? Well, here's a case that you ought to be in because there's going to be a lot of fireworks there. And I think he stayed 1 or 2 days in court with me. And then he didn't show up. So I thought maybe it was unforeseen. He had private work or something. But he never came back. He just walked out. And so Schiffer talked with me one day. Schiffer used to have been in all the cases. So he came up to me one day. He says, well, our boyfriend finally showed his colors. He got cold feet. He was afraid that he would be labeled a red lawyer. And I think that was the end of the case. But I mean, he practiced his own practice. Mm-hmm. He was still in the practice of law.
Now, do you want to take a little rest?